More than just about any other topic in Scripture, money is one of the primary emphases we find. And today on Life Talks, we're going to be talking about money and our kids. My name is Dan. I'm with Josh Brom. Josh is our producer, and he's filling in today for Ben, who's a little under the weather. Josh, thanks for joining us today at Life Talks.
It's always fun to be here, and let's see what kind of trouble we can get into.
Well, I'm sure we'll find it some way. You've got some young Broms at your house.
We have three sons, 15, 13, and 11.
So how do they handle money in your world? Are they just learning? Are they good? Are you just the ATM? How's it working out?
Yeah, you know, I think this is not an area that we've spent that much time on. So we haven't done the typical allowance thing. Maybe that's because I didn't grow up having allowance. Like, mm-hmm. we occasionally, if you did extra chores, you would get money. So typically that's what we've done, is if the kids want to earn some money, we'll come up with some extra chores and mm-hmm. be like, here's a dollar, here's worth 50 cents, or like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we haven't really had like a tithe kind of a discussion, because they aren't having allowances yet. Basically it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I find that's pretty typical for parents. Not to put you on the spot or whatever, but I think there are opportunities for a lot of parents today. And, I didn't do a perfect job with my kids. Some of my kids are great at handling money and some of them aren't.
Yeah.
And some of them have had to learn through the school of hard knocks. Uh-huh. But one of the things I'm thankful for are my parents did a few things for me. You know, but I think there's also just a natural propensity that some people have toward being able to handle money better than others.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I come from a long line of tightwads, for uh-huh. example. Uh-huh. So I've always been creative financially, being able to squirrel money away, save money for things I wanted, you know, dabble with investments and, mm-hmm. and so forth. And
like, there's probably going to be a correlation here between like how much you've given for instant gratification, right? So you've got like the kid with the marshmallows study. Like, I bet the kid who holds off and waits and has the two marshmallows later.
Yeah.
I bet those kids are usually more savers.
Yes. Than and stars. I was always the kid who would have waited to eat my marshmallows. Yeah. I was not the impulsive, nice. Oh, I've got to have these things right now.
Yeah.
But I think every parent needs to work with their child in this, in that I'm not musical. You're musical.
Right.
So your mom and dad at some point sat you down in front of a piano and said, look, we're paying somebody to give you lessons. And you became not just adequate, you became proficient, gifted, fluid at it. But I got to think some of that is discipline and some of that is just natural giftedness.
Yes.
I think that's true of finances as well.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, my mom sent me down at a piano and for 6 years threw her money away giving me lessons until the teacher begged her not to bring me back. And that was probably, both a wise financial and musical decision on their part.
Sure.
So I just want to talk about this a little bit today because, you know, I talk with a lot of Gen Zers. Mm-hmm. You would represent Gen Xers?
I'm technically barely Gen Y or I'm barely millennial. So I'm born in 83. I think the cutoff is 82. So I think I'm barely a millennial almost.
And thank you for making me feel ancient, because I graduated from college in 83. But the reality is, every generation kind of looks at money a little differently. Like, my grandparents, for instance, lived through the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Everything. My grandfather, when he died, still did not have a dryer. Because he thought it was foolish to waste money on electricity when you had a perfectly good clothesline in the backyard.
Yeah.
He never had an electric or a gas-powered stove or electric stove because he cut his own wood, and you get that for free on the farm.
Yeah.
And when he died, he left $250,000 in his savings account. You know, so
wow.
You look at that and you think, well, what I don't know if those choices were well.
It might not have been the most. You can go imbalanced both directions.
Yeah, but I mean, he also remembers shooting squirrels and rabbits so that he could feed his family. So that's part of it. Hmm. But so let me just kind of give some practical ideas on how we can teach some kids. First thing you mentioned right off the bat is is the notion of giving kids an allowance.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of a mixed bag. Some people say, well, I don't want to pay my kids to do things like normal activities for a family and so forth. And I would just suggest this. Giving kids an allowance is not necessarily about paying them for being responsible members of the family, but it is truly, if you do it correctly, a way that you can teach just how to handle money and so forth. So my mom was pretty smart when she did this. She paid us, well, first of all, our first allowance was a quarter. So, you know, not exactly. We finally got up to 50 cents. And when mom would do that, she'd pay us in nickels or eventually when we did get up to a dollar, it was in dimes. And
I like how even then you guys weren't even using pennies. Like, yeah, what's the point?
Yeah, there really wasn't never a point. Even though I can remember penny gum machines.
Okay,
where you got two square pieces of gum for a penny.
Two.
Yeah, wow. That was a big time. Ford gum machines.
You were rich.
I'm going down memory lane now. But the reality is, giving me an allowance was a tool that mom would use so that we could prepare. Now for me, it didn't work because I tended to hoard mine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and. I had the, you know, quintessential piggy bank on my dresser.
Yeah.
And I just popped mine in there.
Yeah, this would have been me too.
Yeah, plus we didn't go anywhere where I could have spent it. I mean, we lived out on the farm. There was no place to go. Yeah. But the idea of giving your kids an allowance is so that they understand that they're going to get a time in life where they're going to handle money. They're going to need to be able to do it. And the good things you can do with it and the bad things you can do with it.
At what age would you start them?
I really would start at the first part where they start knowingly want things. You know, every three-year-old wants a candy bar at the checkout line.
Right.
But beyond that, where there are things that they would like to get, you know, some toy, some, you know. So I'm thinking, you know, somewhere between 5 and 8 years of age is a good time to start that. But this kind of goes to the second thing that I recommend, maybe even before an allowance, is open a savings account for them. So this, my parents did at a very early age. Now, in those days, they had what they called a passbook savings account. And the passbook savings account, you got a little book from the bank, and they literally wrote in an ink pen the amount of money you put in, the date you gave it. And then every time you brought it in, they would update the interest on it, which was really interesting.
By hand?
By hand, yeah. And they would let you know how much you had in your account. But everything was, there was no computers. So everything was done by hand ledgers.
Wow.
And they would send you, you know, a typed report every so often. I don't remember what it was, but it was quite primitive. But every time you go in, they would calculate how much money you had earned in interest. And in those days, interestingly, this is back in the 60s and 70s, you could get, you know, particularly in the 70s, you could get 8, 9, 10% interest for a while on your passbook savings account.
Wow.
So it was always interesting to me that I'd have, you know, some money in there. And then I would say, oh, they added 12 cents. They added 15 cents just for holding my money. And that was my first introduction to investment.
Hmm.
But here's the other thing. And some of these kind of dovetail into each other as we progress.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes my grandparents would give me a $5 bill for my birthday or for Christmas, I'd get some money. When I was in Sunday school back in the 60s, we had an old guy in our church offered us $5 if we could say all the books of the Bible in order correctly without a mistake.
See, I love that kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was really cool.
You want a thing.
Now, here's the story. It tells you a little bit about my mentality toward money, though. So me and another kid by the name of Jake Klosterman, we were the only two kids in our tiny little country church, and we both learned it. We got up in front of our entire church and quoted them, and they presented us with $5 bills. I immediately put mine in my pocket. He put his in the offering plate.
Okay, but still, I mean, that is such an over-the-top, super erogatory, above the Call of Duty kind of an act. There was an agreement here.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You had a motivation.
I had worked for a long time.
I thought he was going to be like, now give me 50 cents.
No.
We'll do that in the office.
Yeah, I did tithe off mine because my parents taught me tithing. But I take that five. I took the $5 bill after I tithed, the $4.50, whatever, and I put it in the account.
Yeah.
And it eventually got to the point where I had $100 in there and I wanted to buy a calf. And in those days, you could buy a calf.
You wanted to buy a calf? That was like the big dream?
That was a dream. I wanted to buy a calf for $75. And so I bought it because I knew I could let the calf grow up and sell it and get more.
So this was a big investment thing.
This was a big investment.
How old were you?
I was about 8 or 9.
8 or 9?
Yeah, because the reason I remember this is because...
And he bought a calf?
Well, I lived on a farm. It wasn't a big deal.
Still.
But here it's kind of funny because then I started learning the opposite side of it. As I was probably 9 or 10 years old, I had gotten a used bike for my birthday. Mm-hmm. That was, that was a big deal to get mm-hmm. a used bike. Mm-hmm. And I learned right. But I went to town one time with a friend and he had a new bike. And in the 70s, they had what they called a sissy bar that was on the back of it. And they had a banana seat and they had real high handlebars. It was so cool. You have to look up Google 1970s bicycles. I mean, it was the bee's knees.
All right.
And so I decided I had to have one of those. I came back and I started negotiating with my parents. I offered them my calf for a bike and I offered to empty my savings account in order to get a bike.
How much was the bike worth?
Bike was probably about $35 in those days, they absolutely refused to let me do it. They said, no, you've got to wait. And then I got it for Christmas. So that was, nice. That's how it ended up. Yeah. But that's another principle that I think we need to do. And that is the principle of teaching delayed gratification.
Yeah.
Our kids need to know that it is good to wait because there are a lot of adults who don't know that it's good to wait.
Yes.
And so what we do is we put it on a credit card or we spend money that mm-hmm. was reserved for something else. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, we create a trap for ourselves further down the road.
Yeah.
And on our next episode, I'm going to be talking about mistakes that adults make. And so I'll kind of tie some of these together. But the third thing I would say is, or fourth thing, is to teach tithing. And people say, oh, well, of course you can say that. You're a pastor or you're a Christian or whatever. I believe that on biblical grounds, but I also believe it on financial grounds for a couple of things. Number one, we always ought to have a generous heart for others. Hmm. So just the concept of not spending everything you have on yourself, I think is just a wise moral concept. Mm-hmm. But also we realize that everything is from God. And so as a gift from God, as every penny we have is a gift from God, we recognize He is the ultimate owner of this. We don't take any of it with us when we go. And therefore, by tithing, by giving the first fruits, the first part of it, then we are making a statement about our acknowledgement of who owns it, where it came from, and showing a priority of God in our life. So these are things I think are important to teach to children.
Yeah.
But I also say this, it teaches discipline. Mm. So I knew for every dollar I got to keep 90 cents of it. Eventually, I would learn I'd only got to keep about 50 cents of it when Uncle Sam got involved.
Yeah.
But I knew to start off the bat, every dollar, a dime went to the Lord.
Yeah.
And that taught me the idea of proportionality, that we can't look at a dollar and say, I've got a whole dollar to spend.
Yeah.
Because that'll play into the idea, I get a paycheck, I've got a whole paycheck to spend.
Right.
Well, no, you don't. Yeah. In a paycheck, you may have a few $100 left to spend because you've already made commitments.
Right.
The government's going to get it. You've got a house payment. You've got electricity. You've got food. You've got to feed your kids. Got all these things. But when we on Friday, as we get our paycheck, we look at it and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to hit the fun times tonight or I'm going to go do this. And then we spend the money and then later the bills come in and we've got a problem. So the idea of teaching proportionality and giving the Lord the first fruits, I think, is the thing. Now, my mom made this easy so that I could figure it out. This was before I understood decimal points and moving the decimal point over 1 point to get to the tithe. She paid me in nickels or dimes.
Yeah.
So if I had 10 nickels, one nickel went to the Lord. If I had 10 dimes, one dime went to the Lord. And it became very easy for me to tithe. And
that probably helps set an end too. You're physically separating.
So I'm a lifelong tither. I've never gone without tithing. I mean, you could go back and look at my W-2s for my entire adulthood and see that they align, with my income at least.
Yeah.
And I don't say that because I think I'm noble or you should be impressed by that. It's just how
this
I live my life.
This is something that got impressed upon you at a young age and as a result.
As a result. And now I can look back at my life and you've given hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Lord's work and I don't even miss it.
Yeah.
I don't even miss it. I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
And I also believe that it has allowed me to live better on the remaining 90% because I approach it with discipline.
Mm.
And that, I think, is the Lord's special blessing to people who teach tithing or live by tithing.
Yeah.
You will live better on the 90% than if you kept the 100% because you're living strategically and thoughtfully.
Yeah.
So then the next thing
So then jumping back to when we were talking about like what we've done, so like one of the few things that we've done is with chores is they have our kids, whether we're consistent with it is a totally different thing. But the idea in the house is all the kids have certain daily chores and that's just expected. They are part of the family. And then occasionally when they've begged, we will find some extra big chore they can do to give them some money. So, like, what do you think of that idea?
And that's actually my next point. I think that is the wise way to do it. And by the way, you said something I think is really important. Hmm. You said, not that we're always consistent with that.
Yes.
Because nobody is.
Oh,
nobody
good.
Is. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's some, you know, influencer mom somewhere who's, you know, but no, nobody is. There are times when, you know, I'm like, Mom, where's my allowance? You haven't paid me my allowance in 6 weeks. You know, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. So that's the reality. But again, taking these steps in the right direction. But there ought to be some things that you do in your family because you're part of the family.
Yeah.
And we don't get to that idea where, well, that's not my job, or how much you're going to pay me. Yeah, if I had ever said to my dad, you know, how much you going to pay me after I pick myself up off the floor?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I had
a shaped hole in the wall.
Yeah. Exactly. Like one of those cartoons.
Right.
But, you know, I had to mow the grass. I didn't get paid for mowing the grass. I didn't. You know, my sisters had to, you know, and this sounds really sexist, but we had outdoor chores for the boy. I was the boy. And we had indoor chores for the girls. And, you know, I had to feed the cattle. Feeding the cattle, by the way, was part of the way I had the privilege of having cattle as well. So you know,
that's pretty cool.
That was the trade-off. I could keep a certain number of cattle based on the fact that I was working on the farm. I didn't get paid for working on the farm, but I did get the privilege of, you know, having, you know, when I went to college, I sold 7 cows, which I had.
As a side benefit to this podcast, just for any parents who are having kids complaining about their chores, just have them watch this podcast and listen to kids. Like, none of them are having to deal with having to feed cattle every day or anything.
I mean, you know, before school, you'd have to get up and cut the ice in the wintertime because they didn't have anything to drink. And then when you came home, it got dark at 4:30. Sometimes I'd get home after it was dark and we didn't have lights in the barn. I'd have to take a lantern, a battery-powered lantern down there and feed the cows in the dark.
Required viewing for all Life Fellowship families. I want kids to start having to come up to you and ask about what things were like back in your day.
Yeah, and I look back at it and I think it was a great way to, I mean, you know, I obviously didn't stay on the farm, but I think it was a good way for me to learn the work ethic. I will also say this, as soon as I could get a job in town, I did. So, and this is one of my other points. Let them get a job early.
Yes.
Now, this is just drives me crazy about our government. Our government is so worried about sweatshops, is that they've made it hard for kids to, you know, to get jobs and earn money, and to our detriment. Hmm. So kids are going to do something. So if they're not earning money, what are they doing? They're downstairs scrolling through Instagram, playing video games and whatever, sneaking porn.
Yeah.
And parents,
social media getting really messed up.
Really messed up when they could be flipping burgers at McDonald's. And now that we're saying that you got to pay a burger flipper
Chick-fil-A,
yeah, particularly if you're a Christian homeschooler. But you know, now in California, it's $20 an hour to do that. And that's, I think, another damaging thing. No teenager is worth $20 an hour. Pay them 10 and that'd be fine. Pay them 5. And you know, I used to, and again,
send mail to Dan
in my day, my grandpa would pay me a nickel a bale. But the reality is the principle is teaching your kids how to work, teaching your kids to get a paycheck, teaching your kids how to spend the paycheck and letting them get it. You say, well, you know, there's no Chick-fil-A's in my town or whatever. By the way, Chick-fil-A, I think that's a wonderful thing they do. They work around the government laws, and generally they're very well run. Hmm. They train your kids to be polite and dress right.
Yep.
And, you know, we kind of make jokes about, you know, Christian chicken and homeschooling Chick-fil-A kids. But I got to tell you, it's far better than, you know, letting your kid rot in the basement or having your kid work in some pagan place where they're going to be deconstructing. Yeah. So these are opportunities. But buy your kid a lawnmower. And go to the neighbor's house and teach that. You know, farm your kid out to other people and say, do you need somebody to rake leaves? And these are things.
Or have the kid go door to door.
And by the way, I have consistently hired young people, even knowing that they probably wouldn't do as good a job.
Yeah.
Because I appreciate that kind of initiative and work ethic as well. And I've hired kids to help me in the garden. I'm old now, you know, so I want somebody to help me with, you know, my kids are all grown. Help me with my tiller. Help me doing stuff I just don't want to do anymore.
Like
getting the mildew off the side in my house. I'll give you $20. Work for me today.
Yeah.
We talk, we learn. And these are important things. So get them a job early. Mm-hmm. Let them, here's a real important thing. Let them handle cash. Don't give them a debit card.
Yeah.
Having to part with that cold hard cash, learning to count change.
Even adults.
Even adults. Oh. I mean, statistically, we know this, that you're more likely to spend money and you're likely to spend more money using a card than you are cash. Yep. I've often said this, we would have a revolution in this country if every Friday afternoon after you got paid, you had to pay your taxes in cash. But they don't. They take it out in advance. You don't really see it, so you don't feel the pain. But if you ever had to, you know, take your $1,000 paycheck and start rolling off $100 bills and handing them to an official with the government, there'd be a revolution in this country. But that's another rant.
Send your emails to Dan at lifetrailer.com.
But and then just kind of the other thing is, this is such a big one, and it's the last one, but teach the dangers of debt early.
Yeah.
And by insisting on teaching delayed gratification, you'll also keep them from going into debt. When debt becomes a first option rather than a last option, we are training our kids to become in bondage. And so it is so important, so huge. Don't let your kid I think it's dangerous to let your kid take out a loan for their first car. Let them save up. Tell them when they're 13, look, you're going to want a car in 3 years. And by the way, don't give your kid a new car when they're 16. They'll never appreciate it, and they're going to wreck it. Statistically, they're going to have an accident the first year or two. Don't let your kid borrow money for their first car, and don't buy them their first car, because if you do, no other car is going to be as special. Yep. You know, I'm so glad. My first car was a 1960 Ford Fairlane, three on the column, and the gear shift came off in my hand.
I know what that means.
It was a standard transmission, and rather than have it on the floor, like on the right, it was on the column of the steering column, and it had three gears in reverse.
Oh, okay, yeah.
As I was going home, it came off in my hand. I paid $350, or my dad actually got it for me, $350, and then when I sold it, he made me give the money back to him. So that was the deal.
That's pretty cool.
He didn't want me to have to sell a cow.
I mean, you could have bought four calves. You know?
I could have, but and then I used it to get to town. Yeah. I mean, to get my job, go to my job. So, but and then the next car was a $600 car I bought for my grandfather.
Yeah,
and then I saved up. I worked during college. Let me say that again. I worked all throughout college, saved enough money to be able to get a newer car. It wasn't a new car. I didn't get my first new car until I was in my 30s, and then it was a cheap old Saturn. And to this day, I could buy a new car. I don't, because I've learned on these things. Now, again, I'm not saying if you buy a new car, you're bad or whatever. But I'm saying is, when you learn that money is a tool, it is not a goal.
Yeah.
When you learn that money can work for you or you can work for money, that's a principle. These are important things, and we have to start teaching them to our kids when they're young. Mm. Otherwise, they're going to be in bondage. Their marriages are going to get in trouble. Mm. Their relationships are going to be stressed. Mm. They're going to struggle in areas of their life that are going to be very difficult for them, and they're not going to have anything to give to their children or their children's children in the future.
Yeah. So one quick bonus one I just wanted to add is, one of the few memories with my dad that comes to my mind often, even as an adult, was the day, and I was probably my late teens by this point, but he sat me down with a spreadsheet to talk to me about compounding interest. Mm-hmm. And he has set up, you know, this thing to show, you know, if you start a savings account at like age 20 versus like age 40, like here's how that kind of goes. And I am not a financial expert, so I don't understand all the different things. And it didn't work. I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to pro-life work. I didn't have money or whatever. But I still remember that kind of concept of, oh my goodness, if you start at least sooner than later, this can make a huge difference eventually.
And that's a great segue into our next episode of Life Talks, because I'm going to be talking about mistakes we make and things we can do on that. And the principle of retirement, I'm nearing retirement age. I'm not there yet, but I'm getting pretty, I can see it from where I'm at. Yeah. I did not get to, because again, I was in the ministry, did not get to start preparing for retirement until I was in my mid-30s. Mm. If I had started in my mid-20s, I'd already been retired.
Yeah.
If I had waited until my mid-40s or early 50s, frankly, I don't think I could have ever retired. And people say, well, there's Social Security. Social Security is not going to be present in its current form for the next generation.
Yeah.
I'm probably the last generation that's going to
at least this form of it.
Yeah, this form of it. They're going to start income bracketing it and so forth. So we as we go into our next episode, I hope you'll come back and listen to it because, you know, if the Bible talks a lot about money, it's an important thing because it can either be a tool or it can be a taskmaster. And we need to have the right relationship with it. It's not intrinsically evil, but the love of it. The misprioritization of it is,
good
and we have to be aware of it. So as always, thank you so much for listening to us at Life Talks. Josh, thank you for joining me and assisting me today. And folks, if you ever have a topic you'd like to hear Ben or I talk about on Life Talk, send it to us at lifetalks@lifecharlotte.com. And until next time, thanks again for joining us here at Life Talks.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.